Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Mad Jin. With guest co-host...
Semperfi.
Now we're live.
Now we're live!
Oh dear.
Alright, guest. Make yourself useful.
Oh. Hello, this is Polycast episode 291.
Yes.
Yes. With Dan.
We're still here.
Maki.
Lua.
Moki, what? What?
With Phil.
Even my opponents bend over backwards.
And Mad.
Phil's still waiting for the reach around.
And I am the less than stellar guest host, Semperfi.
I think the reason Semper only said Maki instead of Makalua is he wanted to ensure that Maki didn't think she was in trouble, because you know when you hear the full name that you are in trouble.
Totally.
No. You're in trouble when you also hear your middle name.
Mm. Maki sounds very casual, but Makalua, see, it just, yeah, it just sets the tone.
Which is the responsibility? What?
Isn't that your response anyway?
Pretty much. I'll bet war deals getting canceled. Yeah, this has always been a thing.
Straight out of Vanilla Civ 5.
Pretty much. Archon Wing had posted in the forums. He's like, wait, this makes me think. What's to stop you from trading some gold per turn or resource for 30 turns or like a great work or straight up gold and then declaring war 2 seconds later? There's nothing. That's the problem. There doesn't need to be a massive penalty, but there needs to be somewhat of a penalty for doing that. They're suggesting here like a minimum number of turns or a massive hit to your relations, or you just lose what you traded, or you can't use that resource that you traded for or something.
Or you can't declare war.
That's what one of the ones was. You had to wait a little longer. Can't trade for the item or whatever, trade the gold and declare war on the same turn at the very least. You know, it may be like 5 or 10 turn wait.
Just make a truce. It's not a big deal after that, probably.
Yeah.
Or there's also potential for the deals just stick around. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. Have it running during war.
Ooh, it's true. There you go.
Well, I mean, you could put it on pause. Like, you'd probably have, like, some ability to pause and, quote-unquote, sanction somebody. But then you'd have to pick that deal back up after the war.
You could force it to go during the war. It'd be pretty hilarious to have people locked with negative 30 gold per turn while fighting.
I don't know. I just, in part, I have this vision of, hey, you want a trade deal? No. Declare war, you have a war, and then you instantly declare peace. And it was, hey, let's trade. Just like I can get an instant embassy with you when you wouldn't trade it to me before we had war.
No.
But besides from that, this whole straight up gold thing where it was, hey, I'm going to give you my luxury for 200 gold. Yeah, we don't have to worry about that in Civ 6. And they eventually got rid of that in Civilization 5 because some people would use that to then turn around and buy units or some such, usually. But I think, for example, okay, on this turn, hey, I'm planning on declaring war with you. Hey, would you like my dice for 5 gold a turn? If I instantly declare war on you, I haven't even made 5 gold per turn because there hasn't been a turn yet.
Yep. And another thought is, what about the CB system? What if, say, you had a CB against somebody and they know that you have a CB against them, so why would they accept your trade deal?
Well, it depends what kind of CBs we're talking. Some of them are like perma CBs in essence.
True.
That needs its own revisions. That's a separate.
Yeah.
But if it was the thing like, I told you not to settle near us, or I told you to stop missionarying over here, they know you're currently mad. Well, I'm not making a trade deal with them, because if I do this again, which I'm probably going to do, they're going to come after me.
Yep. The old Civ 5 got rid of it. Why is it still in Civ 6? You should not be able to trade for gold unless you're like super friendly or allied.
Yeah, because then it always turns into, so, hey, here's this resource. Just give me your gold straight up. Okay. By the way, bleep you.
Yep.
It's not that hard. Like, even Civ 4 did it. Lump sum goes for lump sums, and per turn stuff goes for per turn stuff, and just gets canceled if you fight.
Yeah, I could see, like, lump sum gold for techs or civics, if that's a viable thing. Although I don't think you should be able to do that.
No.
I don't think you should be able to do that, but...
That would work, in principle.
In principle, yeah.
Because it wouldn't be suddenly, hey, we just bought this technology. You just declared war on me. We don't have the technology anymore. What happened? Yeah, no. You're not going to take that away from you. That in and of itself, yes. But of course, as we're also getting at, that gets back into, I mean, it's a tech trade. It's a tech purchase.
Yeah, you shouldn't happen.
No. The research agreement system is much better, which of course is also in this game. But it's, hey, it's over.
Really not.
It's over an extended number of turns, plus you have to get to friends, and so, I mean, if you did that, if there was a way, you know, when you are declared friend to then declare war, can't do that, but let's say you could do that, then, oh, well, the research agreement only had one turn to go, then you would just forego all that investment, because you were only going to be getting something at the end of that particular number of turns. It's not like you were getting something every single turn, but let's say even you were. Let's say that for whatever reason there's a trade deal, it's going to be 30 turns, and it's going to be 5 gold a turn. If you decide on turn 15, you know what, I'd rather go ahead and I declare war, I think you should be able to do that, because, yes, you've gotten the gold per turn for as long as you were at peace. You no longer have to pay that gold per turn, or they no longer have to pay that gold per turn, because you're no longer getting the resource. But then the idea being other civs going, hey, wait a minute, you just didn't declare war, but you also had a trade deal going on. So even if they don't necessarily denounce you for that, they probably denounce you for declaring war. But yes, this also came up in the thread, they would be less likely to trade with you, because it seems like the only reason you want to trade with me is to somehow lull me into a false sense of security that you're not going to attack me, so I'm less likely to trade with you. Now, you might not care at that particular point in time. I don't need your 5 gold per turn. I don't need anybody's 5 gold per turn. I'm making so much gold per turn, it's coming out of every orifice possible. But if that's what you're going to do, then there absolutely should be a consequence. And the idea that came up in the thread about tying it more to the diplomacy system rather than it just being kind of separate within the diplomacy system, as in there's absolutely no consequence or no benefit otherwise during the diplomacy system, yeah, that should change.
You say those words, but I don't really believe those exist.
Yeah.
Diplomacy system, what's that?
Well, it's like in competitive MP again. Why would someone like be forced to care about someone breaking deals? I mean, yeah they might break their deals, but anyone might break their deals to win.
Yeah, but that's the thing. When human versus human, you know that it might happen, so you're not going to be the idiot who trades somebody's gold per turn for flat-up gold. You're not going to be a bank for somebody else, because obviously...
Then why is this happening in single player?
Because somebody wrote the AI stupidly.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be building mechanics around this stupidity. We should be fixing the mechanics.
Yeah. No, the mechanic should be no one is able to trade gold per turn for gold or anything for flat gold that is like resources or whatever, unless you're already allied. That's it. That's just some, keep it simple. But then the AI shouldn't be willing to trade away a lump sum gold, because it's better for it to have a lot of gold than to give you a lot of gold.
I'm certainly fine with it being that you have to at least be friends, and we're going to be talking about what's the point of friendship in the next topic, actually. That, okay, that would trigger the ability to buy something for a lump sum of gold, but maybe in that particular situation, it would only be, say, for example, a luxury resource and not a strategic resource, because I just enjoy the thought of, you know, again, oh, would you like this iron so you can construct swordsmen? Okay, and then I declare war on you, and it's, aw, do you no longer have the ability to do that because you no longer have the strategic resource? Well, maybe we should have been a little bit more formal friends in that case. Maybe you shouldn't have been willing to depend on me for that strategic resource, unless, in fact, we were allies. And then if I then turned around and backstabbed you, then there's even that much bigger of a diplomatic consequence that... Quite frankly, at that point, should at least, for anybody who cares about our relationship at all, that knows that we exist on the map, you should at very least then turn around and be denounced, and maybe declared on as well. Because clearly, you have no boundaries.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing. I think when it comes to the diplomacy side, I totally agree. Trade deals, broken trade deals, stuff like that, should all be part of a diplomatic level mechanic. But I think it shouldn't necessarily be entirely the I like you, I hate you numbers, because then that could just downward spiral everybody. Should be trust. Should be a trust mechanic that works very similar. You get points either way. And then you can get points for completing trade deals. with somebody or trading embassies, or if by extension, if you know two people are trading and that trade deal ends without it crashing, then maybe you give a little trust bump to them, to both partners, not as big as you would get for somebody completing a trade deal with you. And if they break it, then they lose trust. That way you can have that trust number figure into things like, well, you're horribly untrustworthy. Why would I be friends with you? Or you're horribly untrustworthy. Why would I open my borders to you? Things like that. And then you can have it separate from the plus minus, I hate you because you farted and stuff like that.
Maybe that's why they don't plain like you. Maybe that's what that modifier is, that you let off a little bit of odoriferous gas in that first instance, yep. And you just don't remember, and clearly they do. That explains so much now, I understand. But yes, then conversely, if you do go ahead and you honor that agreement, and both of those parties honor that agreement, then yes, that can go in as a separate variable in terms of the diplomatic modifier to be more likely to trade with that person. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm more willing to do just anything with that person. It's like, oh, hey, you traded. You honored that a trade agreement. You want to be allies based on that in and of itself. But hey, yeah, if you're willing to trade with this person and honor your agreement, then anything else being equal, yes, I would also be willing to entertain a trade with you.
I can trust that you're going to finish your trade deals, but I still hate your guts.
There you go.
I'll take your gold, you filthy heathen. Elsewise from the thread, oh, Carpius brings up, try to look at it in the historical sense. Many a war was started over broken trade deals, treaties. The exploitative aspect of making it an advantageous deal right before declaring war sort of fits in with real-world politics. Broken treaties are an equal opportunity offense.
Yeah, it's never this stupid. Like, I promise to pay you this much for all your money right now. No. No one ever did that in reality.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
That anybody's willing to admit to.
There was lots of deals like, hey, I'll give you this if you give me that, or, you know, whatever. And then one side just never paid up. That happened.
The one-sided trade deal. I demand this or I punch your face. Okay.
Yeah.
That's something different completely. That's not a deal. That's an ultimatum.
Isn't that what sanctions are supposed to be?
That's what Dan does to the city-states.
And also, a lot of deals... Or so when it goes to that point, a number of wars got started because somebody else didn't hold up their trade deal. So these two parties made a trade deal. The other person didn't hold their end up. So party A goes to completely not part of the trade deal group and says, hey, they aren't holding up their trade deal. And that other group goes, yeah, let's get them. And then people not part of the trade deal get into the war. That happened.
Not necessarily that that would happen if it was just one trade deal that you broke, but if you started doing that with multiple people and over an extended period of time, then you know what? I hate you, but we hate this guy more.
Yeah.
Because they're clearly trying to take us for a ride. So we're just going to set aside our differences for right now, and we're going to punish that person, whether it is, or should be, at some point, outright conflict. But it could also be, you know what, we're just going to agree not to trade with you.
Yep.
Maybe we'll open borders. I don't know why you would do that necessarily, but okay, we're just not going to trade with you. We're not going to do that because you are not honorable. And again, yep. You might not care. You might not care because you're steamrolling. That's fine. But you start trying to playing the AIs off of you, because of course, good luck doing that in a multiplayer situation with most people. Yeah, and also to Phil's point too, we got to work to get the AI to recognize this as well, but I would rather it be, let's be putting this into the game and also be working on the code for the AI to at least, if they're at least not going to take advantage of it, at least not shoot themselves in the foot.
Mm.
Yeah.
But also, some of
those...
Not make
it so easy mechanically for anybody to screw anybody.
Yep. And a broken trade deal can lead to a special CB to enforce the trade deal. So you just have to do enough damage to force the other party to do the trade deal.
Bring back a U4 war recompense. Go, go.
Go.
Ah, maybe it's, you've canceled this deal. You agreed to this. So either right now you pay up the full amount, you know, like you promised, you know, 5 gold a turn over 30 turns. We're turn 20 in. You've decided that you are going to break that deal. Maybe you could even prompt to say, you know what, I'm going to break that deal. I don't have to declare war. I'm just telling you that this deal is done. And then maybe that person can say, hey, either you pay up the remainder right now, or we're going to declare war on you or denounce you. if that's a bit too extreme. If it's, well, this is the only real offense that you've done, maybe we're not going to knee-jerk react to canceling a trade deal 20 turns in when there's only 10 left and declare war on you. But there is going to be a consequence unless you pay up right now.
And if you do break it, then that other party has the amount of that trade deal, the value, still sitting there expecting you to eventually pay it off so that they won't necessarily trade with you until you pony up the previous trade deal that you broke.
Yeah, exactly. It was, oh, you want a trade deal of this. Speaking about this, here is your bill for the outstanding trade deal with interest.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a financial penalty as well.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff they can do with that. They make it a bit more interesting.
I mean, heck, I could even see a situation where it was, oh, you decided that you're going to break your deal with this particular person 20 turns in, and then... Well, often I find that if I do that, then an AI in the next turn realizes, oh, hey, you've got a surplus this. Can I go ahead and purchase that from you? Here's a suggestion that how I could get that resource. Maybe it should be even more specific where it's, you know, hey, congratulations on you for canceling that deal with that person or indeed outright going to war with that person. Here, here's a deal for that specific resource. And we recognize that and we like you for that because you obviously hate this person too because your action dictates that, in fact, you dislike that person as well.
Speaking of love and hate.
It is a fine line. What's the point of friendship? And this is from Blue Dogs, who is their first post on Civilization Fanatic Center, and they registered on the 26th of September. Congratulations on getting your first topic onto Polycast. You really should get an achievement for that. That should be an achievement unlocked. So there you go. Shing! There's the sound effect that goes with it. He's like, what is the point of friendship? That's it. What do I do if I get another Civ that wants to be my friend? And of course, there's the kind of meta answers. That is a deeply philosophical question, according to Amtrak Quebec. Or, it sounds like someone doesn't believe in the magic of friendship. Oh, you must be a brony.
My God. You know what? It's a non-aggression pact. That's why you're signing it. It's an in-game enforced non-aggression pact at that.
Yeah, you can't even break it.
It's true. At the very least, if nothing else, that's exactly what it is. And some people in the thread are like, you absolutely never do this. Or, you always do that. And it's no, the answer lies somewhere in between. If it's, you know what, I'm really concerned about Civilization A beside me, let's say Gilgamesh declaring war on me, and I really want to go and take Montezuma out, hopefully Gilgamesh will declare friendship with me so I don't have to worry about him attacking me right now. And so I know that I've got at least 30 turns that I can now and go after Montezuma in the hopes of wiping him out and or be able to position myself for after those 30 turns. If Gilgamesh goes like, hey dude, what's up with that? You declared war on someone else. I declare war on you. You then don't have to worry about having a war on two fronts. Positive diplomatic modifiers with anyone who likes the Civ you're declaring friendship with, and negative points with anyone who hates them, as pointed out by Egon Spencer. But Archon Wing was like, you also can't denounce each other. Well, yeah. Yes.
I love you. I hate you.
That's more in the, if you're about to go warmongering and generate a ton of points, your friends can't yell at you for it.
They should be able to, though.
Yeah, they should be able to have a...
Boy, they signed that non-aggression pact. Screw them.
Yeah, but they should still have the ability to use... diplomacy.
Yes.
To say, whoa, man, there's a trade table.
Yeah.
But that's not diplomacy.
Well, non-aggression pact is like rudimentary tier zero diplo. So you get that.
Yeah, it's not actual diplomacy, though. It's just kind of like, shut up over there.
I do recall from Civilization V, if you had a declared friendship and then you took an action that another civilization didn't like, not only was it a negative modifier because, for example, you declared war, but it was even worse because we were friends. And now I really don't like you because I thought you were an honorable person. That should be back too.
Well, whose fault was that?
Mm-hmm.
For thinking that I was an honorable person? Come on, it's ridiculous.
Oh, now, Phil, I wasn't thinking about you. Don't worry.
No, I'm just saying the AI does this and it's like, well, okay, but you're still the fool that signed this.
I guess that would just also make you think maybe a little twice about who it is that you were declaring friendship with. Because I know in Civilization V it was, I would really like to be friends with this person, and I want to attack this person. But let's say that's Gilgamesh and Montezuma again. I want to be Gilgamesh's friend, and I want to attack Montezuma. Oh, but Gilgamesh and Montezuma are already friends. and they already have that relationship, so they're probably going to be mad with the friend that declared war on another friend, particularly when that was already established. You wouldn't want it to be that, like, one turn, hey, guess what, Gilgamesh, I'm your friend, I declare war on Montezuma, and then the next turn you find out that, oh, now Gilgamesh and Montezuma are friends, and Gilgamesh is mad at you. I mean, I guess that could still be the case, but it's like, why would you become friends with the person I just declared on? Doesn't our friendship mean anything?
No.
The AI will do it, though.
It depends how much gold is involved.
Well, that's true. Friendship can definitely be bought. Air quotes, friendship.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed Cairo, yes, who said, in terms of benefits, you get the benefit of letting them forward settle you with impunity.
I don't like this benefit.
Letting them forward settle you with impunity, you don't have to become declared friends in order for them to do that. So,
yeah,
that's kind of one of those things where, yeah, if you think that they might be doing that, then, well, you can look at it two ways. You can either say, okay, I don't care, or yes, as kind of also came up in the thread, please go ahead and settle cities, and then I don't have to spend the money on the money or the more likely the production in order to get a settler out there to settle. Which in and of itself would be fine, except that, also tying to another topic, the AI, when we're talking about the AI, tends to not settle in the best locations. So I'd rather them not settle in the first place. So if I think that's going to be someone that is going to be forward settling me and I'm not going to be able to do anything for it for the duration of the friendship, I'm probably not going to be declaring friends with them. If they're on another continent right now, that's great. Let's establish that relationship, because if we're friends, I'm probably going to be able to get better terms in order to be able to, tying into the previous topic, my trade deal, so I can be getting more gold to purchase more units to be going after who I want to go after. You just really have to look at, you're not just declaring friends for friendship's sake. It's not just about, yay, positive diplomacy modifier, because you might be setting yourself back by, for instance, allowing them to then forward settle you, and then what are you going to do about it except sit there and stew?
You know what you could do, though, is if you have a couple scouts out, you can then block their settler progress with impunity. Even if they're a human player, they've already signed that friendship. They can't declare on you, so they can't move their settler forward because they can't get around the scouts.
And as Archon Wink notes, hey, don't forget the reverse also applies. You can forward settle them, promise not to do so anymore, and since every one of your new settlements will not be as close, you can get a bonus for keeping a promise. Yeah, well.
Yeah.
There is that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you'll get notified with, hey, you kept your promise. Okay. And away we go again.
Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of early game settlers, and Archon Wing, who is the topic creator for this thread as well, feels that it makes the game too easy to be able to capture settlers. I feel like we've covered this in previous episodes to an extent, at least. And Archon Wing thinks that settlers should either be destroyed on capture or turned into a builder.
Back in Civilization 5 days, when that would turn into a worker, and then that worker had infinite number of charges, because we didn't even think of such a thing, then, yeah, okay. No, I don't get the benefit of settling a city, but I do get the benefit of something that continuously, if I want to, is going to be able to continue to improve parts of my empire. There was a suggestion in this thread to treat capturing settlers like capturing spies. That, no, you wouldn't be able to settle it, but you would hold on to that unit, and then that could become part of a quote-unquote diplomacy system that you could then trade in future for gold, which you could then, for example, use to purchase a settler, although I don't know why you do that, they'd be considerably expensive. But then that way you would get the equivalent or an equivalent of whatever resources went into constructing that settler at some point in the future, but you wouldn't be able to use that settler for that purpose, which also tied into a comment of, I don't see why you would be able to capture a settler from another civilization, settle it, and then expect them to remain loyal to your empire because you captured them from their own people. Which, of course, then introduces a whole other mechanic, which would also be interesting. But I don't like the idea of just the settler turning into a builder, though. Yes, there's definitely the point about the AI makes it way too easy in order for their settlers to be captured. I think that's a separate consideration altogether. And yes, the AI is absolutely atrocious with that. But not just taking into account the AI, but also in a multiplayer situation, although I don't know why you'd be sending unescorted settlers out in order for that to happen. But
well, you wouldn't, but you could get overwhelmed if you don't have sufficient escort.
Yes, absolutely, you should. So, as I said, I don't like the idea of it turning into a builder. I'm open to suggestions about it not just being a settler that you yourself can move, but I want to be able to get some kind of equivalent output to that particular unit. I'm kind of leaning more towards the idea that, hey, we can actually go and capture that settler, and we can extort that for gold, and then you might say, but then you're going to return the settler, and then they can go around and settle it. Well, in that particular situation, if that settler was going to be somewhere where you wanted to settle, then you can just hold on to that unit until you are in a position to ensure that they're not going to settle in that spot, or you don't care, and then offer to give it back to them. My only caveat to that would be, so as long as we don't have the AI overvalue the return of that settler, because they certainly overvalue the returning of their spies when they could just go ahead and send out another one.
Your entire treasury and a couple of great works.
Yeah.
Why not treat them like Goody Huts? Like, you capture a settler and you either get a population boost or something that would be beneficial, but not so beneficial that it's worth an entire city and not necessarily building, but you capture it and it's like, hey, so you can force these people to settle in your city, and that's plus one pop for free.
My main issue is counterplay. Like, if somebody just surprise declares and hits the hex that a settler is on with a lot of stuff, even if it has sufficient escort otherwise, that settler is instantaneously removed from the map as far as the person who originally built it is concerned. That's true if it's a Goody Hut. It's true if they turn into a builder, because if they get recaptured, they're not going to turn back into a settler, and they didn't survive either. And if they're captured like spies, there too, as soon as that settler is touched, they're gone, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that is actually something that's bad for the person sending the settler out, if they have a chance at retaking the settler, which they might. We're not talking about the crap AI here.
Well, that's kind of like why I like the idea of it being treated as a spy, because when it does get returned, and you're right, yes, it does remove it from the map.
It's not getting returned.
But I would have no problem with it being going to give me gold or whatever it happens to be. I'm going to give you the settler, but the settler is certainly not going to be returned to wherever it was on the map. I'm going to send it back to the nearest city that you happen to be at, for example. So you do get that unit back in that situation, if we can come to an agreement for getting that unit back, just like a spy.
Yeah, it still basically destroys your opportunity to settle in the near future, because like, no one competent is going to let you get that unit back for a decent price anytime soon. It's basically gone.
I would say that then go ahead and construct another settler. I mean, yes, it's frustrating that it's been removed from the map, and you could be surprise decked out of nowhere. Oh my gosh, you know, like, we were friends, but friendship just ran out, or I don't know what I did to annoy you. What do you mean we just met and you declared war? You just don't plain like me. Like, screw that. But I guess that ends up being the chance that you take in sending it out there and having to decide what is or is not a sufficient escort. Because sometimes crap happens. But I also don't like the idea that once it's taken, that you're really not going to have an opportunity to get it back as it is right now, because you're just going to turn around and settle it. That no, that unit has kind of in this suspended state where at some point in the future you have the opportunity to get it back and to get it back on the map.
Yeah, just in practice, it might as well be gone if you do that, which I'm not sure actually makes the game better from a design standpoint. Oh, yeah, it makes it harder to abuse the AI because AI sucks, but that's really not what we need to be building mechanics around. The real question here is the capture of a settler relative to other things too strong? And I'm not sure on that. Well, but nobody should be letting their stuff get captured that easily.
Well, it should still not be allowed to be captured and stay a settler.
I'm not convinced from a balance standpoint.
I'm right in the middle that, yes, I think it should be captured and it remains a settler, but the person who captures it is never going to be able to use it as a settler themselves. The best they're going to be able to get is some kind of gold or some kind of combination of resources in order for that civilization that it came from to get back at some point to treat it again like a spy. But at some point, oh my gosh, you want way too much money for that? Or you just like you want way too much money for the settler? Screw it, I'm just going to construct my own again and be done with it and try again. And now, since I know that you're out there and you're probably watching for me to come back, I'm going to protect it that much better this time.
Or, for total giggles, sure, you can leave it as a settler. Sure, you can found a city with it. But maybe we have a mechanic that says this settler actually belongs to that civilization's people. And when you tell them to go settle here, they'll go, yep, no problem. We're going to go join them.
Why don't you just have it settle it as if it's a captured city?
That's what I actually thought we were going to say, Matt. That there would then be no growth in that city. Fine, you can ask us to construct stuff here, but we're not growing until such a time as there's some kind of diplomatic interaction. And that's not necessarily the same thing as having a diplomatic system. A diplomatic interaction that would then allow you to say, okay, fine, that quote-unquote releases that city out of being occupied.
Because then the other civ could get a CB called Liberate, and then they could go liberate all of their cities back.
Yeah, that'd be reasonable. Be fine with it.
And of course, all the population that city is considered of that other civ by everybody.
Now, at least until you conquer that civ completely, which is probably going to happen because they're hosed.
Yeah. But even the game still thinks about, like, even if you hose somebody completely, somebody else can come along and liberate them.
Yeah.
And in the game code, it'll just assume that that city is part of that civ, so they can get liberated.
Or they could just bring civ back from the dead.
Yep. On that brand new city you just settled.
Oopsies.
I think that's fine, though. Like, there's some risk of that, but, I mean, let's be honest. If you're losing cities like that, especially stuff that you're founding relatively early in the game, you're probably not going to win, even if it's your own city. It would be pretty rare to lose a city like that and then win the game.
Yeah, no, but it's for ownership. So say, I don't know, You're at war with somebody, you don't actually want to wipe them out for whatever reason, but you just really hate where they're settling cities. So you beat them up, steal all their settlers, burn down cities you don't like, plant new cities where you do think that they should be planted, and then hand them all back.
I guess.
Oh, speaking of giggles, I know what you do. We just treat them like great people. Hey, you've captured a great person. Whee! They just go back home.
Teleport. Oh,
teleport magically back.
My gosh, no.
You sent the settler halfway across the world. Oops, I hit it. Well, now it's back in your capital. Good luck with that.
The barbs would be sad.
Do you mean barbs, or do you mean other opponents that you regard as barbs?
Yes.
Sure.
I like the settler.
So, what's the best use of gold? So this thread got started by Disgustipated. Best being the most efficient use of your gold. So not just, hey, I got gold, use it. What is the most efficient use? Now, obviously, when you tie in policies that reduce the cost of gold or certain governments which give you discounts, that starts making it far more complex. And then you have to go, okay, how long do I have to be in this particular government to get enough of a discount to make it more worth it than other stuff? So the usual answer is only used for unit upgrades, which is not really true, but definitely one of the best, most efficient uses of gold is unit upgrades, because it takes that cost and cuts it in half when you're using the policy, but only while you're using the policy.
Plus the fact that unit that you've probably been using on the map at some point and all the promotions that it has gained, hey, look at that, now it's got those promotions and it's just been upgraded to the next class, or two for that matter, just pay a little more.
For half price. So the question is, what is the most efficient uses? So this is, I guess you can do this instead of arguing over strategy, you can at least comment on the multiples. He says, is the main use for gold or buying tiles and unit upgrades? Obvious. Do want to buy tiles. You don't want to just sit there and wait for culture to get everything. Especially because this district would look really good over here, but culture is going over there. So
there's an obvious resource right off. Why do you not go there, culture?
Yeah, buying's worth it regardless of cost. Although because of the stupid expandable, the earlier you use your gold, the better. Though then you get into arguments of early gold is more important because blah, 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 blah. So somewhere about mid game, buying tiles is just easy to do. Therefore, it's worth it more because the cost multiplier hasn't gone up as fast as your gold per turn has gone up.
Yeah, and if you're looking to buy a tile, it's either because I can use that now, or in the very immediate future, like I'm going to improve it, or I want to lock that because I don't want someone to, I don't know, forward settle me because we're declared friends.
Mm-hmm. Here's a mountain pass. I'm going to buy that tile and close my borders.
Yeah.
Now you can't get past that.
I'm sorry, do you want to forward settle on the other side of my empire? No, I don't think so. Buy Hex.
Yep, exactly.
That'd be a hard city to hold anyway, but yeah.
And even if they then think about, oh, fine, I'll just go around your border while I'll keep buying hexes if I feel that's necessary. Or, yeah, please, go around the Empire. Try going into the water. I've got time to watch what you're doing and prevent you from doing that.
Yep. The thread started about money, but then it kind of switched over to production.
Yes, and the industrial zone got a kind of a subtopic within the topic itself.
Yeah. So yeah, Victoria started talking about industrial zones are the worst value, with holy sites being potentially worse depending on your victory condition that you're going for. That's not necessarily true, because Victoria was thinking that only one close city got the bonus, but that's not true. Every city within 6 of your industrial zone will get the boost, as long as it doesn't already have another factory or power plant in an industrial zone giving it a boost. So it's not worse than a lot of other stuff, because you can give production to cities that don't necessarily have production, and then they can, instead of building their own industrial zone to get a little production, they can go off and build other stuff. So anyways, yeah, gold, there's lots of it. There's lots and lots and lots of gold. And the further you go on, and the longer the game goes, the more gold you can potentially get. So at some point, you just spend it on whatever you want. But there's some question of like, okay, so is it worth it to, say, buy a granary in a city that you just planted? Or maybe you save that money for a theater or buying a builder?
What usually makes it non-trivial is that those items are moving towards different goals.
Yeah, it's like, if I plant a city in the mid to late game, yeah, I'm probably going to buy the monument, which was brought up because it was basically your smartest choice when you're planting a new city is just buy the monument. It's cheap, and it gives you a big bang for that culture. But then I'm also going to probably just buy all the city center buildings that I can, just to get that city up and running faster.
Yep,
yeah.
Because if you plant a new Pop 1 city and you can add 2 extra food to it off the mark, it's going to grow a lot faster. In the later game, you may not get the output back that you spent in gold, but that city is going to be useful.
Well, you're converting gold into other things, and hopefully you value those other things more than you value the gold that you spent, and that city is giving you a yield that's worth more than if you put the gold somewhere else to get that yield. But like the way city growth scales, that's probably the case.
Yeah, like if I'm playing a culture game and I drop a new city and slap up a theater so that I can put more artifacts in it so that I can get the tourism, it's okay if I spent the money because the game's going to be over.
Yeah, it's not like you can otherwise convert that gold into culture and get as much culture from alternative uses of it. So yeah, then it would be your most efficient converter of gold to culture.
Or, you know, I need to buy a bunch of hexes so that I can slap down a national park so that somebody else doesn't get it.
Or any good adjacency bonus, for that matter, like you were saying earlier. You don't want to be waiting 20 turns just to start your district on the best adjacency bonus spot. That's the reason you built the city in the first place.
Yep.
Yeah, particularly as the game goes on and the district scale. Oh, we've never talked about this before. Pardon
me. No, we've never skipped.
It might take 20 turns to build it anyway, but you don't want to wait 20 turns before waiting those 20 turns.
Exactly.
Yep. Because it'll be longer, because in those 20 turns, you'll have gained more tech and civics. Wait, what?
Yeah, that too. There's also in the thread, someone kind of touched upon it, which was, hey, what about buying buildings in your commercial hub? Oh boy.
I hate spending gold to get gold.
Yeah. How many turns is it going to take for you to break even on that?
Yeah.
At least that one's comparatively easy to calculate.
Yeah.
Because I got some apples for apples. Yes, I can hear the caveat, but Dan, if I buy that market right now, I will get that one great merchant point a turn.
There is that.
There is that. So there might be some edge cases, particularly if, you know, I mean, the sooner the better for a lot of these great people. If you want to be like plowing through some of those first ones, then maybe, yes. But besides that, and that doesn't
generally
seem to be like,
no.
Yeah, no.
I guess it depends. Like if you have a city that has crap production, it's got food and more food and a really nice commercial zone harbor combo with your city center, but no production. Well, then, yes, it's better to spend the money than wait the 30 turns to get a market because you have no production.
Yes, your production in that case are not hammers, but in fact, gold.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really depends. Like when it comes to use of gold in cities for buying buildings and stuff, it depends on how much your production is and what you need right there. If you don't have production, gold is your production. If you have production, maybe you let it take one turn to build that market or whatever, a couple turns.
What kind of city can build a market in one turn that would need to think about this? But yeah, it's true.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Now you build your industrial zones, you got a bunch of hills,
You got the growth going while you're building that up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's something we don't talk about here a lot, but the micro planning. So like when you plant a city, if you have it set up to grow quickly and you have the builders in place to make lumber mills, mines, whatever, get it growing in unproductive tiles super fast, that makes an enormous difference in how quickly that city is useful.
And of course, when it comes to that new city growth, wow, look at all this wheat here. I'm going to be able to grow really, really fast. This is great. You have the housing capacity, right? Oh, hey, look at this gold granary.
Yeah,
oh.
Well, of course, because you farmed up all those wheat, right?
So. You're not just letting that, you know, rot on the fields, are you? You can, you've actually got people there because they're not going to live in the field, okay? They want to live in a house. Fair enough. Fair enough.
A house beside the field.
You can just grow your city and you get a little bit of yields from that, but it's better if you're growing onto something using that food.
And we mentioned builders before. It was mentioned as workers by Epic Western, but builders. Buying builders. He says, my issue with that is that you aren't taking advantage of the 30% production cost reduction from the policy card.
That's only at the beginning, until you get switched over to the +2 charges. And also, why are you running that 100% of the time?
Yeah.
Sometimes you need a builder, but it's not worth it to switch over to the builder production booster, because you have a different policy that you need.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the slots, like, I'm looking to expand. It's like, okay, I've got an economic policy slot, maybe two, depending upon the government that I've chosen here from political philosophy. Okay, so I can get a 50% reduction cost in settler, or I can run that builder. Well, if I get the 50% reduction cost in settler, which, of course, to then turn around and buy that settler instead is going to cost me more gold than if I take the reduction in settler cost production and then just go ahead and buy a worker. Plus, I can send the settler out with escort, probably. Mm-hmm. And once it's there and it's got its tiles, I can build that worker right there, as opposed to say, okay, I'm going to have the worker. It's ready to go. There's no city here. Just a second. I'm constructing the settler now. Just a sec. It'll be there.
Or, hey, I can run the builder policy card for faster builders, but I need this builder way over there in that new city. So I could have the new city build it, take, say, 10 turns to build it, or I can have my capital build it because it can build it in 3 turns, but then it has to take, say, 7 turns to get there. So I could just buy the builder and deal with it.
Or it's, hey, don't worry, I'm going to take that. I've settled that new city and I'm going to construct the builder in this new city I've constructed because there's a 30% cost reduction. Now, what's your current production output? Oh, did you get a 30% boost on your 1 or 2 production? What is that really translating into?
Yeah, 30% of 1 is still crap.
Yep, afraid so. The people are the heroes now. Behemoth
calls the peasants now. Talk about episode 290.
On the topic of the scientist rating, you did not take my feedback that you were absolutely wrong about the science from Holy Site adjacency. That's a really good bonus. Especially if you have chosen one of those adjacency bonus boosters, like the Tundra one or the Jungle or whatever. Because you can get a huge amount of science out of early game Holy Site when it matters most. I did not like how you dismissed it.
I didn't think about it, actually. But yeah, that would significantly outperform Dan's favorite. That's pretty amazing.
It's a huge boost in the early game. So take that.
If you've managed to get that great scientist, certainly you can. And if you decide to go for a religion, sure. Yeah, you can absolutely. If you manage to get that great scientist.
Otherwise, I think the feedback just kind of spun off into a topic that basically we started talking about this episode anyways, about gold to production and where to spending gold versus production.
Well, yeah, see, we're always forward thinking on Polycast. We're really working on the next episode before we ever actually work on the episode. We're efficient.
Mm-hmm.
That's podcast efficiency. Trademark.
You know what, though? I like the discussion about rating the great scientist because I'm horrible about looking at what bonuses are actually achieved from my great people. And it got me thinking more about when to actually push to pick up any great person in general is looking to see, is it worth it to try to pick it up from, you know, another civ that's really close? Or do I just say screw it and then sit and wait?
Well, do you want it? Yes. Go take it. Do you not want it? Let somebody else have it. On the trade route question, external versus internal, the big point there was that you can get more than 4 times the gold that you get from production. Plus, then you can also add in the science and culture and potentially production from sending external trade routes.
Right.
Matt and I are agreeing. We got into a conversation with Casper GM. It's like, I don't quite understand the reasoning here. If sources of gold are more plentiful, that would seem to make production more valuable. And for my comment, and then I let I let Matt read his own comment or paraphrase himself. Imagine that. My response was, in this case, production being less plentiful makes it less valuable in comparison to gold. Yeah, there's along with this greater versatility, gold generation outpaces production generation, and in turn, the respective investment capacity. Now, certainly any substantive means for increasing production is valuable for increasing production, as production sources aren't as plentiful, but its potential is not as great as gold sources are more plentiful.
Yeah, so to sum up, scarcity of resource usually means something is more valuable, but when that scarce resource is only usable for scarce things, it's not really that valuable. And by say scarce things, I mean districts and wonders. That's the only two things that production gives you that gold doesn't. And since gold can outpace production at more than a 4-to-1 rate, at some point, you can just buy stuff.
And as for not being able to construct wonders, well, I'll just buy units and take them from people. And as for districts, there is that in terms of the production. But that's when I try to look at, okay, at some point, we've talked about this before on the show, I want to settle another city. It's pretty marginal land, but the only reason I'm really here is so I can construct another commercial hub in order to be able to get another trade route. If there happens to be some forest and or jungle nearby, then I'm going to send over a builder and I can chop that down. Or hopefully I can actually grow the city enough that it could be working a mine, for example, or a quarry, so that at some point, even if it takes 15 or 20 turns somewhere in there, then it can go ahead and it can construct that commercial hub. And I'm not particularly concerned about the fact that it's going to take 15 or 20 turns because of that ratio and that emphasis of gold. I'm going to be able to get that back.
Yeah. Or more specifically, I spent gold on this 6 builder charges to get 700-800 production from chopping, plus food if you have jungle. So I already made back that production.
Yeah.
In districts. Yes, I guess you can convert gold into production for districts and wonders. Slightly indirect, but it's still plausible.
But the nice thing that came out of this thread, as usually happens on Civilization Fanatic Center, is we are able to extend the conversation from the episode, plus, tying to what we were saying at the beginning, it helped influence topics for this episode because I already knew we're going to be talking about episode 290 feedback. Then I started finding topics that were consistent with that. And I also a belated shout out to Monthar, past guest on Polycast 3 times to this point, who actually suggested the war canceled deal topics. It probably also helped that he contributed to the thread and he's the one that raised the Cassius Belli system connection in there. But it's nice to be able to engage in that conversation with our audience, because it makes the conversation more interesting, and so that way you can actually talk to us, or at us, or both. You know, our existence is being knowledge. We're easy either way.
Whatever.
Who's easy around here?
Oh, Mackie, you don't want to get into that conversation.
I know, but I had to say it.
Recorded for episode 289 with Makalua, the Mian team, Majin, Ixnay, and Mike W.
Let's talk about border expansion points. We got a thread here from Wolf2911. It says, cultures become more and more important in Civilization, and Civilization 6 now has its own civics tree. So, I think it makes sense to introduce new points, which are only for border expansion. We could call them border expansion points. Cultural and military buildings would provide these points.
That's what's called culture? And basically, culture provides those points.
He wants to build military, forth their culture bonds?
He wants military to also contribute, basically.
Well, that's military building. If you run a specialist in an encampment, it also provides culture. So, it does. Already.
This is the thing where you specifically have some Taliji you want to get, and you know it's either like at the edge of the third ring or something, and it's never going to go out there the way the game selects tiles.
Well, that's just different.
Yeah, you could make a case for being able to steer border expansion to some degree, but that's different from this.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question. Let's ignore culture. Let's just say culture is no longer the thing that expands your borders. Let's make it tourism. Bigger tourism provides bigger expansion.
Can you even get tourism in that degree early game?
You get some writers.
I guess.
Some relics.
Not to the extent that you can get culture.
Yeah, relics, some wonders.
It just feels like you would be, in practice, just constrained to whatever you're willing to buy in terms of tiles in your starting ring.
Yeah.
For, like, a good chunk of the game.
Probably. Yeah, it's better than renaming culture to influence or border expansion points.
I don't see what's broken in the first place here.
Yeah.
Unless you want to just build a place where your city's going to expand its culture.
Yeah. See, I would personally, the only thing I would really look at changing right now, well, other than the curve, obviously. The curve might be a little rough for the amount of culture you get. I would be able to, say, select the tile that you're going to culture, like in most games.
Well, that's what I was saying, too, just a moment ago. Yes.
Yeah, do that. If you can pick the one that's going to be expanded into, then great. And if it costs a little more to take that very rough terrain versus the open terrain, that's fine.
Yeah, maybe take a little longer if you don't go where it's automatic. Have a small cost with that. Okay.
Well, you have to pre-select the next one.
No,
cost a little more in culture.
I'd say different
tiles. You want that hill,
different tiles
it costs 25 instead of 20 or something.
Yeah, but not the automatic versus not. I'd say let it pick something automatically, and if you don't like it, you can change it.
All right.
But then see that iron tile. Maybe you have a higher cost for taking that iron resource within your city than, say, an open field. You're exerting your claim to it in a permanent fashion. Maybe it'll cost a little bit more. Plus, they're worth more. And then, hey, you could also interact saying, maybe if there's a different civ's city also within range of that resource, it costs more. Because you're fighting over it. Say, no, I own that.
Assuming someone doesn't just buy it immediately.
Well, you could also jack the price on the gold cost, too.
Yeah.
So, basically, you can contest the resources in between, rather than somebody showing up and just going, hey, everything within three is mine. Yoink. And even your scouts could do all the claiming. Like, while they're out scouting, they're like, yeah, hey guys, there's mine over here. Claim it. But then again, I would also like border wars where you can contest specific tiles.
Oh boy, bring back the you got served at Civ 4. Who likes the Sistine Chapel? Who?
Yep.
Let's see it.
Well, no, not culturally contest, but like saying, okay, there's an iron resource within range of both of our cities, but you spent all your cash buying it. I'm going to go to war with you to get that iron mine flipped over to my city instead. So instead of actually taking your city, I just take the resource.
I see. That'd be pretty niche, but I guess you'd see it here and there.
Yeah. And you could just park your military units on it. Granted, I mean, there's also really cool things you can do with border expansion, which is have units, instead of, you know, culturally expanding, just do away with that concept. Have your units claim territory and, you know, plant a flag. Plant a flag in this area. This is all ours. And then where flags start overlapping, no one actually gets it until you resolve that. That way you could say, like, Canada cut a line across the parallel and said, this is us. Everything north of this is us. Everything south of this is yours. The U.S. and Canada agreed. And they said, yep, good enough. So something along that line, I think, would probably be a better system. That way you could also have less cities, but still claim a bunch of land.
And then fight over it even more when people get pissy settling at each other.
Yeah, I'm just settling in my claim plans.
Yeah. Which is like 2/3 of this continent, so get wrecked.
Yep. As diplomacy gets more refined through the ages, you could have border agreements, and then you don't have to worry about pressurization or somebody settling close to you because you know that they're not going to get the stuff on the other side. You can make agreements with people to respect each other's borders, which would improve diplomatic ties. And then say if you go conquer somebody and no one else agrees that that's actually your land, then that could be a CB because no one else agrees with you.
Well, see if their soldiers convincing us their words.
Exactly.
If you didn't like it, you should have built a bigger army and sent them out to claim more of the land first.
Yeah.
Or you could fight a war saying, you know.
Or you can build a bigger army now.
Yeah. Build a bigger army now and say, nope, we're planting flags all over this. And if it's not within range of a city, then it could auto-flip. Because you're not backing up your claim.
Yeah, you said your borders are all the way to the mountain range, but I don't see your units on that side of the mountain range.
Yeah, I don't see your stuff over here. Have fun. And then you can set up encampments inside the mountains. He's like, nope, everything on this side of the mountains is mine. You can't come get it. I can force project to make sure that I have control over it.
My mountain pass.
You shall not pass.
Let's flood the area with missionaries.
Oh, God.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 441-212-88-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
So what you're saying is when you were in kindergarten, you didn't learn to share, and nothing's ever changed.
Well, no, I learned to share. I just never share the good stuff.
I see. So you would share the broken toys, because then that would still be sharing. I see.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, or the stuff that I'm not currently playing with, you know, because I'm not playing with it right now. But
yeah,
because
it's used goods. Someone else used the used goods.
I like that. I am going to let someone play with the toy that I'm not currently playing with right now because I'm not playing with it. That is spectacular. I approve this logic.
It's efficient, isn't it? If you're not using it, let somebody else use it. Now they're getting bonus, and then you look like the good guy, right?
Except that's wear and tear on the toy, though. And you know, are you taking that into account? Because then you might not be able to use it as much in the future because someone else has, and they've taken those turns away. I mean, those moments away from you.
And mm-hmm. Bump.
I don't know, what's it worth gold per turn then?
I don't know how much gold per turn you got. I'll take one less than your maximum because I'm reasonable.
I'll just take all yours.
See? Imagine it's not reasonable, but
I'll take it all and then declare war on you next turn and take it back. So
I denounce you.
Oh no. Whatever will we do?
Okay, we'll be friends in like 3 turns.
Oh crap, I can't denounce you, you've already declared war on me.
Oh, and I'm also friends with your friends, so now you can't do anything.
Yeah, I can. I can rage quit, see ya.
The solution for everything, rage quit!
I believe that takes us to the end. The end of another glorious episode, however you define glorious, of Polycast. The 291st, in fact. I'm Dan Q, and I've been joined by our return guest co-host, Semper Fi.
Also known as the Mitten Marauder.
Did you like that affectation on her name? Doesn't Semper Fi sound more flashy than just Semper Fi?
Actually, the first time I changed my name was actually because I'd be playing multiplayer and people kept calling it Semper Fi, and it just was driving me nuts. So I was like, alright, it's gotta change.
Wow, I just thought you changed your name because you want to be a rock star. And yes, I just nickelbacked this conversation. I apologize profusely, or not.
That's -10 to Diplo.
Sorry, not sorry.
-2 faction with Phil.
Man, I should make more Nickelback references then. Imagine.
Yay, less potatoes.
And they're better or worse than East potatoes?
Better?
Question mark.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Imagine we'll conduct a survey and we'll report back. Oh, no, sorry, we have first to have a feasibility study on the survey, and then we can conduct a survey at a later date. Okay.
Oh, government.
The me and team.
Enemies throw money at me, but I don't consider it a problem.
But is that because you throw it right back, or you just put it in your pocket, or...
Well, I put it in my pocket or I spend it, one or the other.
But you don't throw it back in their face, just to spite them?
Only when they are...
You throw an army back in their face to spite them.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, when they're captured prisoners in shackles, I might throw some coinage in their face and say, hey, remember that time? But otherwise, it's my money now.
Remember that time. Thanks, MJ. And... Makalua.
Dan, who has 1001 song references for everything, and sometimes they're even puns.
I'm Dan Q. Keep on 7.
Yeah, now I'm totally out of... Thanks for catching me off guard.
Well, hey, you have to get something out of being on the show, right? It's getting caught off guard. There you go. It's an added bonus. You're welcome.
Diplomatic hit. That's minus two or something.
Wait a minute. Minus two. On what's the scale, though? 100? What do I care?
I don't know. It doesn't really matter because there's no diplomatic system, is there?
Oh, I see whose favor you're trying to curry. That's fine. You know, he doesn't invite people back onto the show, but that's okay. It's okay.
Well, I mean, it has been, what, 2 years since I was last on? So, you know, just saying.
I was giving you sufficient recovery time. You should be thanking me.
Record date?
October 7th, 2017.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.